Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening from around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. And each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you all can do me a big favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts, discuss ways that you and your loved ones can become happier, healthier, and more at peace. And I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, when we got started, you heard a little bit of music in the background. I was at the Jimmy Buffett concert, and that was just the closing song, and it just makes so much sense, you know, that we can just all have one love and just get along. I mentioned earlier in regards to our topics that there's always something that you can send to somebody. This is one that you can pretty much send to everybody because health, we're finding out more and more, is the key to just about everything that we're doing. And so our topic today, which also happens to be the title of our guest's new book, is Thinner, Leaner, Stronger, The Simple Science to Building, in this case, the Ultimate Female Body is the name of the book. But believe me, much of the stuff that we're talking about affects all of us, and it is ways for all of us to be in better shape. So, you know, time permitting, and I know we get started a little late, but we're going to discuss three simple laws of fat burning, how to create a flexible diet plan, an all-in-one training system, how to master the inner game of fitness, how to develop a lightning fast metabolism, and how to get and stay lean and toned. And in some cases, while still indulging in what's considered bad foods that you love, such as pasta, pizza, and ice cream. So stay with us. We're going to talk about a lot of things that we're all going to benefit from. Now, our guest, Michael Matthews, believes that nearly every person can achieve the body of his or her dreams. And he works hard to give everyone that chance by providing workable, proven advice grounded in science. Now, through his work, he has helped thousands of people achieve their health and fitness goals, and he shares everything he knows in his books. He's the author of Bigger, Leaner, Stronger, Thinner, Leaner, Stronger, and The Shredded Chef. Michael, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thanks, Alan. I'm happy to be here.
All right. So for those that are just tuning in, you know, we did get started a little bit late, but it's one of the things that happens for a lot of us, and Michael is no different. We have people calling us at all times of the day, all times of the night, and sometimes whatever they have is urgent. And Michael, I love the fact that you're available to people, and even though you knew you needed to get this in, sometimes people are at a crisis point, and you just can't not take the call or you know, kind of cut them off because what they're going through at that moment is obviously the most important thing to them. So share with us a little bit about, you know, your background, you know, how you first became interested in building a better body and getting so involved in physical fitness and recognizing how important it is to everything that we do.
Yeah, so I would say in the beginning, it was pretty conventional for me. I played a lot of sports growing up and got into hockey, which was really my thing. And when I stopped playing hockey, you know, 17 or so, wanted to go find something else to do with my body, how to stay active, and found weightlifting. And it was one of those things, you know, just gather up a couple friends, buy a couple bodybuilding magazines, go to the gym, see what we think, basically. And it became something that I enjoyed. Of course, in the beginning, it was also, there's the benefits of having bigger muscles and looking better and whatever. But as I got more into it, I came to enjoy it just as an activity unto itself. And then as I got older, I came to appreciate more of the health benefits that come from it. And it's not just a point of vanity. Of course, anybody who goes to the gym regularly, of course, there's a little bit of vanity involved, and that's fine. We all want to look good, and we all want to be happy with what we see in the mirror. And for most people, it never gets that never gets out of control. Sure, you have some people, they take it a bit too far, but most people, they just want to look athletic and they want to look good. And so that's how I got into it. And then fast forward a number of years of doing a lot of things wrong. And at least I knew that I didn't really know what I was doing. Again, I was being very dilettante about it. I was just buying magazines, doing what's in the magazines, and not taking it very seriously, so to speak. I decided to really start educating myself on how does the metabolism really work? I want to understand the fundamentals. I don't want to just blindly follow some sort of fad diet or even some guru or expert's diet advice. Like, I actually want to understand the machinery and start there, kind of like a first principles approach. And then with that knowledge under my belt, thinking I'd be able to then better determine what types of diets would be best for what. And same thing on the training side of things. Let's jump into the science of it. Let's get a better understanding of the mechanics, so then I'll have better judgment in terms of what workout programs make sense and what don't. And along the way of doing that, I learned quite a few things that worked well for me, and I started sharing them with friends, and I started training friends, family, people in the gym that just wanted to work out with me. And I was really just sharing, hey, this is what I'm learning, this is what I'm doing, this is what makes sense to me, this is why it's working. And eventually, I had an interest in writing. My original interest was actually fiction, but I've always liked reading. I've always been a pretty good student, and so I figured, why not write a book? Why not just write a simple book that I wish somebody would have just given me back when I was 17, and said, forget all the magazines, just do this, and you'll save yourself a lot of time and frustration, and you'll get a lot more out of the effort you're going to put into this thing. And that was Bigger, Leaner, Stronger. That was the first edition. Now I've since then released. The third edition just came out semi-recently. And I didn't really know what to expect in the beginning. I didn't know if anybody would really care, but people did like it, and it became popular pretty quickly. And then women started reaching out saying, hey, a lot of this seems like it'd be applicable to me, but I don't necessarily want to be bigger. What should I do? And so that's why I took the information. And then in some cases, the women's book is quite a bit different now than the men's book. The program is a bit different. So although there are fundamentals in terms of how our bodies operate that don't change, men and women's bodies have a lot of the same hardware, so to speak, and it works the same way. It's just we have some advantages that women don't have in terms of muscle building and fat burning, but the basic approach, those first principles don't change. It's just you do need to tweak things in terms of, like, when it comes down to the specifics of what should you be eating, why, what should you be doing in the gym, and why. And that's how the women's book came about. And along the way, I wrote other books, and it was it just kind of became an organically growing thing.
Well, and I have a comment and a question. And the comment is, I love the fact that you brought up the part in regards to science, the idea that things are backed up by science, because I know that, you know, many people have read different things or different diets or different workout programs, and then we find out 5 years, 10 years later or whatever that maybe that wasn't the best way to go. And probably because nobody really backed it up with science. So I love the fact that you're doing that. In fact, I have a functional medicine doctor that I see, and it's one of the reasons is that, you know, he still understands all of the things that we're supposed to do for our health and looks at things very organically, but he then says, I'm still going to back it up with science. So I love that you're doing that. And so from a question standpoint, you're bringing up the differences they've had to now study between the way in which men work out or women work out or how it benefits. What would you say to couples out there that have taken working out as something that they do together? You know, what would you tell them? You know, how would you say, look, if you just alter your workout, because we don't want to make things to where people aren't doing things together, because togetherness is wonderful. What would you tell them?
Yeah, the great news is I've heard from many, many couples over the years who have used my work to start working out together. And although their workouts are a little bit different, a lot of them are, they're rotating through the same stuff in the gym, and they're spending about the same amount of time in the gym, and they're doing a lot of the same exercises. But a couple things that change, for example, is, and this is a simple example. So especially with let's take people starting out. So guys start out on that. Your average guy is going to start out quite a bit stronger relative to his body weight than your average woman. And it's actually not true. Many people think that women can't gain muscle nearly as effectively as anywhere near as effective as men can. But that's actually not so much true from a physiological kind of mechanistic standpoint. In fact, women can gain muscle fairly effectively. And like, for example, yes, women have much less testosterone than men. So it's assumed that, oh, that just means a lot less muscle growth. Not necessarily, because women have a lot more estrogen than men, and that also has muscle building properties. So where women, though, are behind men is just where they start out, because women start out with a lot less muscle. And so when you're looking at muscle gain, it's always your progress is going to be relative to where you're starting. And so as men are starting with more muscle and are starting stronger, they're able to gain more muscle, let's say, in their first year of weightlifting than most women can. But most women can still make good progress relative to their body weight and relative to the amount of muscle they start with. And so guys then, when they start working out, when they start lifting weights, are able to start with heavier weights in terms of percentage of one rep max, right? So you can tell a guy, all right, I want you to start bench pressing, and I want you to do three sets of five reps on the bench press with about 80 to 85% of your one rep max, which is you're gonna get to a point where you're like one or two reps shy of your form breaking down and you're not in failing, right? Mm-hmm. And that works. And most guys they'll go on the bench press and they'll put anywhere from probably 80 to 100 pounds on the bar, and that's it. That's where they start. And if they're younger guys, if they're older guys, maybe it's a little bit less, but still they don't have a problem with that. Many women though will struggle with just that point alone, because, and I know this just having worked with so many women years, the bar alone might be too much or just might be pushing them to their limits if they're told to do that. Whereas if you tell a woman to work with dumbbells, which now you can control the weight better, because a barbell weighs 45 pounds, so you can't go beneath 45 pounds. And so if you tell her to work with dumbbells, and then if you also tell her to work with slightly lighter weights, so let's say work with weights that allow you to get around 10 to 12 reps with maybe 70 or 75% of your one rep max, that now becomes much easier to do. And then, so she can work there. And for many women, that might mean starting out with, again, just having worked with many women, I'd say 15 to 20 pound dumbbells is probably average where they start on that exercise. And then they work with it, and as they get stronger, they can then graduate to being able to use the barbell efficiently on the bench press. And so that's those are kind of two examples. There's some exercise selection that mm-hmm. some differences that make sense, and then also having women work with lighter, but not light. It's still much of the weightlifting advice for women has been very, very lightweight. You know, the pink Barbie dumbbells and 30 reps, and you kind of just end your sets when you get sick of doing them. And because you're doing so many reps, you're like, all right, either my arm's on fire now, or I think I've done enough of this for this set. And that's not a very efficient way to work out. So this is actually the approach that I recommend for women. Very much feels like quote unquote heavy weightlifting for them. But I would say by bodybuilding standards, it's moderate weightlifting. Whereas guys, you can tell them to jump into heavier weightlifting right away.
Gotcha. We have a listener question, and as I glance at it, and again, I want to thank those that take the time to send in a question. They come in through email, come in through instant message. I want you to know that we appreciate it. As I glance at this one, it reminds me that I think one of the issues that a lot of us run into is after we've had an accident, something, especially people that have been more athletic, then there's some form of accident or some form of thing that has kept us from being able to work out, and then it's the getting back into it. And I think this question goes along those lines. This one says, last year I was in a biking accident that left me with lower back injury. I'm 51 years old and was in great shape up until this happening. I am regaining my mobility and feel it is time to get back into a workout program to shed the extra 15 pounds that I've now gained. Would your book be one that would help me get there safely and more quickly? And this is from Regina in North Carolina.
Hi, Regina, for the question. I would say yes, absolutely. However, the workout program itself, there might be some exercises that would not be good for you to do depending on what your situation is specifically. Like, for example, if you're having back issues, a deadlift might not be called for, although it's often used with rehabbing back issues, but it's hard to say exactly because I don't know exactly what's going on. And a barbell squat is another example. So I would say yes, like all the diet information you're going to find very helpful, and it's going to help you understand exactly what you need to do in the kitchen to lose the weight and lose the body fat you want to lose. And on the exercise side of things, you'll learn a lot in terms of proper, on the theory side of what makes for an effective resistance training program, really. But as far as the specific program in the book goes, that's the only caveat, is due to the injury that you sustained, there may be certain exercises that you can't or shouldn't do. So if you have someone like maybe a physical therapist that you've been working with that you could run the program by, and they could look at, just because they know specifically what happened, and they would ideally be able to guide you in terms of, because there are always things you can do. It just might mean that you have to use alternative exercises. And I do include some of that information in the book, but because I can get quite specific to what the situation is, you're not going to be able to look up exactly whatever part of your back got injured or whatever happened and go, oh, okay, so instead of the barbell deadlift, I'm going to be doing the hex bar deadlift because it's better given my circumstances. However, a specialist will be able to give you that information.
Okay. One of the things, and to kind of get back to the book, is that, you know, I like the fact that you feature real life stories, you know, that because I think in many cases when a book's written like that, people can relate to a particular story that seems to fit better for their situation. And just like this question, you know, the someone that has been through an injury, they were in good shape. Do you have sort of a favorite story from the book? You know, that, you know, one of the real life stories that just kind of not only gets you pumped up, but everybody that reads it gets pumped up just reading it and kind of putting themselves in their place.
Oh, that's a tough, a favorite story. My email inbox is actually over 150,000 emails sent and received by now and not unread, but sent and received. So, and I have probably 1,000 plus success stories on my website over at Legion Athletics. However, there are a few stories that I feature in the women's books that is why I feature them, just because I really like them. But there are so many that didn't get featured because, you know, you only have so much space for that kind of thing. However, I just recently interviewed somebody on my podcast who is a success story, and her story was pretty cool because she started when she got a breast cancer diagnosis, and she started treatment, and that's when she started going to the gym and started lifting weights, and just decided that she was going to try to make her body as strong as she could during the treatment. And now not only is everything fine in terms of her health, but she has the body now that, you know, she's actually didn't ask her age. I'm sure we have it here, but I didn't ask it. I would guess she's around 50 or 40s for late mid 40s to 50. And she now has, she's happier with her body now than in college. Cause in college, she thought you just need to do a ton of cardio and starve yourself. And so she had a low body weight, but not really the look that she wanted. And so not only did she beat cancer, but she also now has this fantastic body that she loves, and she's an opera singer. And so she's an entertainer. So, you know, what she brings to the stage, she always had an idea of what she wanted to be able to bring to the stage. And so stuff like that is touching, really. And again, I have quite a few of these stories just because I've been collecting them for years now. But I tried to feature some of the ones that I thought was like a good little cross section in the book.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned cardio, and there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of myths and things as it relates to cardio. We're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, share with everybody a little bit about some of these things, because people now can go on the computer and it'll say, oh, you know, don't do this kind of cardio, or don't do this because it's actually making you older. And there's all of this, there's information and there's misinformation. And I'd love for you to clear up a little bit. But when we come back, you're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that is legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Integrations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are talking with Michael Matthews. We are talking about health. We're talking about his newest book, which is Thinner, Leaner, Stronger, The Simple Science of Building the Ultimate Female Body. But in general, we're talking about health for everybody. So this is just his latest book. And when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about cardio. And so I asked Michael, you know, let's kind of weed out some of the facts and some of the myths that's now going around as to the true value of cardio and the way to do it properly.
Yeah, so one of the big myths is that cardio is better for fat loss than weightlifting. Many people still think that if you want to lose fat, that you need to do a bunch of cardio, and that is simply not true. And there are two primary reasons for this. One is that it's too easy to eat the calories that you burn during cardio. So if you go for a 30-minute run, you might burn about 400 calories or so. And then if you go eat, you know, some nuts and yogurt and an apple, well, you've pretty much just eaten all that back. And so what that tells us then is, and this is one of the big, I'd say, weight loss myths out there, is that calories don't count. That's certainly not true. Scientists have known the importance of calories in and calories out for upward of a century now. And scientifically, it's referred to as energy balance. And so what we need to be looking at is not necessarily how many calories we're burning during exercise. Yes, that matters. But more so, how many calories are we eating versus how many calories are we burning? And research also shows that our bodies adapt to the exercise that we do. So over time, that same cardio workout actually just ends up burning less and less energy. Now, on the flip side, you have weightlifting, which isn't popular for weight loss, because it's actually a bad way to lose weight, but it's a great way to speed up fat loss and to preserve or build muscle. And that's also something I talk about in the book, is that I want people to get away from just thinking about weight and living and dying by the scale, and thinking more about body composition, which is what that weight is made up of. And primarily in terms of muscle and fat, of course, that would include bone and organs and other things, but we're focused on the muscle and fat content. And so really, when somebody says they want to lose weight, what they're saying is they want to lose fat and not muscle. And if somebody wants to gain weight, what they're saying is they want to gain muscle and not fat. And research shows that weightlifting is a great way for speeding up fat loss. I talk about a Duke University study in the book that showed that you had one group of people who did 3 1-hour resistance training workouts per week. You had another group who went jogging for 3 days per week for about 45 minutes per session. And you had another group of people who did both the resistance training and the cardio workouts. Mm-hmm. And ironically, it was the cardio only group that lost the most weight, but that was also the only group that lost muscle. And the group that lost the most fat and gained muscle was the group that did the resistance training and the cardio workouts. Mm-hmm. And so that's more the approach that I recommend, where people emphasize, we want to emphasize the resistance training because we only have so much time we can exercise. So we emphasize the resistance training, which builds muscle, which actually helps increase our metabolism, and which of course burns energy, quite a bit of energy during the workouts themselves. We understand what we're doing in the kitchen. We understand how to create meal plans that work. We understand that that's what really drives the fat loss. And we use cardio as a supplement. And as far as specific types of cardio go, if you want to maximize fat loss, high intensity interval training is the way to go. There's no question. A lot of research has shown that. However, it does put a bit more strain on your body. And if you do it on a bike, for example, that's how I prefer to do it. It minimizes the strain, but it's still more stressful than doing just low intensity, steady state cardio. And so that's fine as well. If you are okay with burning a little bit less fat, over time, you can do lower intensity cardio. And if you want, I mean, something I've written about and I've promoted heavily is walking. A lot of people don't realize that walking is great cardio, and that you're going to burn anywhere from 300 to 400 calories an hour. And it has no real impact on the body in terms of impairing post-workout recovery. And if you go outside and if you have some nature around you, you're also probably going to experience some mood benefits as well. That's been shown in research. And so walking is also a viable strategy. It's not as effective if you want to maximize fat loss, again, as higher intensity. But if you can do several hours of walking per week, it is going to speed up your fat loss.
Now, and again, you're talking about fat loss, and I completely agree. In essence, you're saying you can lose inches and still, you know, and maintain the muscle mass. So, but every time I think of fat, it now reminds me that from a dietary standpoint, share with everybody a little bit about the changes that we've now learned in regards to, fat being in some cases good for us. Because I think we went through a period of time, years ago, to where you could eat all these sugary things, and supposedly it was just speeding up your metabolism, but you shouldn't have fat. So everything became low fat food, low fat this, low fat that. Share a little bit about kind of where we've come today as to what is more realistic.
Yeah, the low-fat craze was a disaster. If you look at it just in terms of obesity statistics, I mean, things just got worse and worse. And unfortunately, a lot of the foods a lot of the sugary foods that we like to eat are just very easy to overeat. And also, in the absence of regular exercise, and if somebody's also overweight, eating a lot of simple carbs, a lot of sugary treats, is an increased risk of diabetes and other problems. And so it's great that we've gotten away from that. However, ironically, the pendulum has swung pretty hard in the other direction, where now some people are telling us, well, you eat fat and burn fat, and now you should be eating as much healthy fat as you possibly can, or the more healthy fat you eat, the more fat you burn. And that's simply not true. Strictly from a weight loss perspective, the downside to fat is that it's very calorie dense. And the reason why I'm talking about calories is, just to put a quick definition to it, is it's a potential of energy. It's an amount of energy contained in food, right? Mm-hmm. And so our bodies burn a certain amount of energy every day, and we eat a certain amount of energy every day. If we consistently feed our bodies more energy than they burn every day, we are going to retain some of it in the form of body fat. And that's one of the primary reasons we have body fat. I mean, we've evolved to be able to store excess energy, because not so long ago, in an evolutionary perspective, we might have to go days without food, and then we finally kill an animal or something, and then we feast and we eat all these calories. We eat a lot more energy than our body needs to survive while we're eating. And so the body had to have a mechanism whereby it could reserve some of this excess energy, because who knows, we may not get food for another week or so. And that mechanism was great in the past, and now is not so useful when we have unlimited calories at our disposal. We don't have to get up. We can just like tap on our phones a couple times. Mm-hmm. And so the energy in, energy out component of weight loss will never change. If you want to lose weight, and again, this is the weight of the evidence is so clear that scientists aren't even researching this anymore. They're now looking at behavioral things. How can they get people to actually incorporate this information practically in their lives? But if you want to lose weight, you need to be consistently eating less energy than you are burning over time, because that difference, that energy deficit, mostly is going to come from body fat stores. The body is going to go, okay, I'm not getting enough energy, so I better go to my body fat and burn some of that so we can stay alive, so all the cells can keep going. And so dietary fat contains a lot of calories. And if a high fat diet, if eating a high fat diet contributes to overeating, if it encourages someone to consistently eat more calories than they're burning, it will simply result in fat gain, not fat loss. And this has been shown in a number of studies, and I've experienced it working with many, many people who were following high fat diets where they weren't tracking calories or planning calories. They were just eating, following, you know, basic rules and guidelines, and losing weight or even gaining certainly is helpful. There's no question. We need to be eating a fair amount of healthy fats. And by that, to be specific, monounsaturated fats in particular, like what you'll find, nuts are rich in monounsaturated fat. Olive oil has a bit. Avocado mm-hmm. has a bit. Polyunsaturated fats, which would be other oils, are probably number two on the list, and then number three being saturated fat, which we do need to get some of, but that's, I think, another area of where marketers went, they just took things too far in telling people that they can eat all the saturated fat they want, which to people, what they heard is, oh, I can eat all the butter and all the red meat and all the other animal products I want and be not only healthy, but lose weight. And no, that's not true. And I think that's bad advice. But yes, we do need to get some saturated fat in our diets. So again,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, I was to say, and another
yeah,
area.
I was just going to say that that's the again, we need to look at it in the context of calories, and then making sure that we get enough fat, but not so much that it's causing us to overeat. And the macronutrient, the nutrient that our body needs in a large amount to survive, that is, I would say, unequivocally good in higher amounts would be protein, and particularly in people who are physically active. And there is a lot of research that has mounted over the years to show this. Like, for example, specifically for weight loss, a high protein diet outperforms a low protein diet every time, always. There's just no question. It is better in every way. And not only do you lose fat faster, but you also retain more muscle. Or if you're training your muscles, you're going to be gaining more muscle if you can gain muscle while losing fat. Depends how experienced of a weightlifter you are. So high protein, ironically, I know a lot of people that are pushing a high fat diet and let protein and carbs fall where they may. I don't like that advice as much as a higher protein diet and let carbs and fats fall where they may, especially if you're physically active and you don't have any metabolic disorders.
Well, let's talk a little bit about intermittent fasting. So this is another thing that has now become very popular. They do say that it's kind of going back to the time that you just mentioned a little bit ago when you didn't always know, so your body stored because it knew that it was going to need that at a later time. So your body does know how to burn that. What's your thoughts on intermittent fasting? And like so many things, where's the sweet spot for this and where is it maybe being taken too far?
Yeah, my general advice with intermittent fasting, if people want it, like the tweet answer is do it if you like it, basically. And if you're training your muscles regularly, I would recommend what is on, it's a more of a bodybuilding centric protocol, but it's called the Lean Gains protocol. It might now have been taken and turned into other names, but that was the original, where you are basically every 24 hours, you are not eating for 16 of those hours and you have 8 hour feeding windows. So you eat all your calories within an eight hour period. Some people like to switch those and go 18-6, but what I wouldn't recommend if you are training your muscles regularly is that you do long extended fasts every week, like the 5-2 diet, where you're basically eating nothing for 2 days a week and eating normally at 5 days a week, just because the lean gains approach is going to be better for building muscle and retaining muscle. But beyond that, if we're talking about weight loss, a number of studies have shown that so long as calories and protein are matched, you're not going to lose fat faster on an intermittent fasting diet versus a traditional feeding diet. So again, do it if you like it. And what this really comes down to for most people, what also I like about the lean gains approach is it's kind of like just skipping breakfast. If you don't like to eat breakfast, you're not hungry in the morning, skip breakfast and start eating at 12 or 1 p.m. And if you're like most people, your last meal is probably, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 p.m. And so if you just do the math, that's kind of what you're doing is you're just extending that period of where your body's in a fasted state, which many people don't necessarily know what that means. But all that means is that your body has finished processing the previous meal that you ate and your insulin levels are at a low baseline level and your body is now surviving fully on its own fuel reserves, which is primarily body fat. So you eat a bunch of food, or even just a moderate meal, it takes your body a fair amount of time to process that food. It obviously burns the food for energy while it has it, and then it stores a bit of the extra that it doesn't immediately need, and then it finishes that process. And then if it didn't have anywhere to get it more energy, we would just die, or we'd have to either eat food constantly, like every hour we'd have to be eating food. So the reason why we don't, though, is because the body can go, okay, time to start burning body fat now. And so that one other argument that I think makes a little bit of sense for intermittent fasting is if you are eating a high carb diet, which is actually not a bad idea if you're a very physically active person, especially if you train your muscles a lot, by incorporating some fasting in your diet, you may enhance your body's ability to burn fat for energy, just because if it gets very used to burning carbs for energy, it can make fat loss a little bit, not harder from a mechanistic standpoint or physiological standpoint, but actually just more, you might be hungrier. You're going to find it more difficult to stick to your diet. And there are possible health benefits associated with regular fasting, but a lot of that is animal research that's being extrapolated to humans, or is research done with people who are not healthy. And there are just a lot of questions. Like, what we don't have is research that is done with healthy people who have good body compositions, who are exercising regularly, who are eating well. For those people, does intermittent fasting have any health benefits to offer? We just don't know. And so it's a bit disingenuous to sell it as like the secret to, you know, staying young, or the secret to optimizing body composition or physiological function, that the evidence is just not there for. Where the evidence is strong is if you like it, you can lose plenty of weight doing it that way, so long as you know what you're doing with your protein and with your calories, and you're not going to lose muscle. You don't have to worry about that. So that's my current position on intermittent fasting.
Okay. Now, we mentioned a little bit, I mentioned in the introduction, how to get and stay lean and tone and still be able to indulge sometimes in some of the bad foods. I know there's different, there's different camps in regards to that of, you know, that you can't have cheat days, you can't. I know one of my personal rules is sort of the 80-20 rule, because I believe that if you're stressing over the fact that you're not having certain things, the stress is probably worse for you than whatever that pizza was going to give you. So what are your thoughts in regards to how they can, you know, so they've done the right things, they've got the book, they're in pretty good shape. They're like, okay, I'm feeling good. But you know what? I'm taking the kids out tonight and, you know, I want to have pizza with them. So what are some of the things that you think they can do that will allow them to still enjoy those times and still stay, keep the shape that they want?
Absolutely. Speaking of 80-20, I talk about in the book. So here's a good rule of thumb. So long as 80%, or more is fine. I would try to say don't go too far below that. But so long as around 80% of your daily calories, just the normal stuff that you're eating, is from nutritious, relatively unprocessed food that you're making yourself. And again, I like to be more specific than just, I don't consider any foods bad. Maybe with the exception of trans fat, artificial trans fat, because it is just so bad for us. It really should just be something we never eat, but sugar is not in the same category, not even remotely. And so long as you are getting most of your calories from quote unquote good stuff, you know, just healthy stuff, the stuff that our moms told us to eat. It's really, really pretty straightforward. Fruits, vegetables, legumes, grains, and things, again, that are relatively unprocessed, that are nutrient dense, that we prepare ourselves. We can take the remaining 20% of calories and do whatever we want with them and have no negative consequences. And so for some people, that means that they like to have a little something every day. And for me, I don't have that much of a sweet tooth, so I have some dark chocolate every day because I like it. So I have about 100 calories, maybe 150 calories of dark chocolate, which, yep, that has a little bit of sugar, and no, that's not a concern. But if I were more into something else, like maybe it was ice cream, I could do the same thing. It wouldn't be that much ice cream, so it may not be that satisfying.
Right.
But that would be totally fine. And, you know, ironically, as far as body composition goes, you could do a lot worse than that. You could get half of your calories every day from just junk food and maintain a great body composition. But I wouldn't recommend that because it's not good for your health. And over time, what's going to happen is you're going to develop nutritional deficiencies, and your body's hardware, your body's muscle building machinery is not going to work as well as it should. And there will be issues that will develop eventually. But this is in the book, I talk about this, where let's get away from just good and bad foods and let's look at the overall picture. So you're going to a pizza place with your kids, no problem, have some pizza. And if you want to even take it a little bit further, then you could, let's say you know you're going to do that and you want to have a whole pizza, that's what you want to have. And now that's something that, again, I wouldn't recommend doing every day because pizzas have a lot of calories. So that means that if you did that every day, you're going to be getting a lot of your calories from pizza. And that's probably not the best way to go, because that means you're going to have to steal calories from fruits and vegetables and the good stuff that your body needs to just stay healthy and perform well. But if you're doing it, like, let's say it's once a week. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So you know you're going to do that. And let's say you also know that you burn around 2,000 calories in a day. That's your average on a, say it's a Saturday, you're not exercising, it's a rest day, you're not particularly active, so you're gonna burn around 2,000 calories on a kind of a rest day. What you can do then is you can think with that and go, all right, I'm gonna eat light throughout the day. Maybe I'm gonna actually skip breakfast Saturday morning, so a little bit of fasting. And then I'm going to have a light meal for lunch. I'll have like a 500 calorie meal for lunch. And then I'll have another light meal in the afternoon, kind of a snack meal, maybe another 500 calories. And so then when I get to the pizza place, I can eat 1,000 calories of pizza and not even have overeaten. Like, and there's absolutely no negative ramifications whatsoever. And then the next day, I'm going to get back to my normal routine, and I'm not going to eat 1,000 calories of pizza.
Exactly. Go back to your 80 percentile. You know what, Michael, we have run out of time, but I got to tell you, I really appreciate you coming on. What is the best way for people to either get in touch with you or to get the book?
Absolutely. Yeah. So get in touch with me. Instagram is a good place. Muscle for Life Fitness. They can always email me. I reply to a lot of emails every day. Mike@muscleforlife.com, spelled out. And my kind of my hub on the internet where you can find my books and everything else is Legion Athletics, L-E-G-I-O-N Athletics. If you just search for that, you'll find me.
All right. And for everybody out there, if you're driving or you couldn't write that down, we'll have it on the Answers for the Family website. So you can always pick up that information there. Michael, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we'll be joined by Diane Price and Susan McCollum to discuss their new book, Write Your Stress Away. Tame the tension in your life. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or iHeartRadio. If you go to one of those platforms, sign up, the show will be sent to you automatically. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people. I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our posts. If you like them, please like us, spread the word. And for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.